Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
Hello and welcome to Reality Check. Today is Tuesday, the 19th of January, 2010, and I'm your host, Tony Pittman. And this is episode 24 of Reality Check here on Joy 94.9. Reality Check is a show designed to give you a healthy dose of reality. And we do that by promoting the art of critical thinking and skeptical analysis. Each week we bring you a roundup of LGBT news, followed by an in-depth analysis of an issue related to the paranormal or the pseudoscientific. And finally, we wrap up each show with a movie review. On today's show, after our LGBT news roundup, we're going to begin an examination of one of the most implausible of all the alternative medicines out there, homeopathy. Can pure water really cure you of all your ailments? Well, that's what we'll try to find out. Then in our movie review section, we'll have a look at the brand new Australian film, Brand New Day. So for all that and more, stay tuned here on Reality Check on Joy 94.9. Okay, here's our LGBT news roundup for the last week or so. First, let's head to the world's most populous country, China, which has been sending out mixed messages on the issue of LGBT rights over the past week. First of all, last Wednesday, January 13th, the state-run English language newspaper, China Daily, featured a front-page story on a wedding between two Chinese men in the city of Chengdu in Sichuan province, including a photo of the happy couple. The newspaper called it the first such public event in the country. Of course, the wedding was purely symbolic because Chinese law doesn't recognize same-sex relationships in any way. And it was also, in my opinion, ridiculous to suggest that this was the first same-sex symbolic wedding in the country, given that China has well over 1 billion people and a history going back thousands of years. Such a statement is pretty hard to believe. Anyway, many observers viewed the fact that China's state-run media were reporting on a same-sex commitment ceremony as a sign of an improving attitude to LGBT issues from the Chinese central government, especially as it came hot on the heels of the opening last month of the first officially authorized gay bar in China, which is in the town of Dali in Yunnan province. The government also allowed the first ever Gay Pride Festival to go ahead in June last year in Shanghai, although it didn't allow a parade and did shut down some events at the last minute, but did allow some smaller events to go ahead, like art exhibitions and film screenings and a party. China only decriminalized homosexuality in 1997, so some commentators are seeing this as a gradual opening up after a long period of repression. And China observers were even more heartened as they waited last Friday for China's first ever gay pageant, the Mr. Gay China competition, to get underway in Beijing. The pageant was going to include 8 finalists competing in a fashion show, a talent competition, and an underwear parade for the first ever Mr. Gay China crown, who would then go on to compete in the Mr. Gay World competition in Oslo, Norway, next month. However, just 1 hour before the pageant was due to go ahead, when all the spectators were arriving, the judges were taking their seats and the contestants were getting all preened up and ready to go on show, the authorities changed their mind and came in and shut down the whole event. And being China, of course, a one-party authoritarian state, there's nothing anyone can do. So now, unfortunately, no one from China will be heading to Oslo in a few weeks. And I have to say, the pictures in the newspapers of the disappointment on the faces of the contestants really broke my heart. They looked so devastated. Why can't governments just let people be free? It makes my blood boil. Well, I'll just take a few deep breaths here to calm down and move on to our next news items, which are, well, actually the other news items for today are both updates on issues that we've covered here before on recent episodes of Reality Check. First of all, let's go to the Perry versus Schwarzenegger case in California. This is the federal court case arguing that banning same-sex marriage in the United States violates the federal constitution. And it's a case that is attracting a lot of news coverage in the US at the moment. But even though it's getting a lot of attention, no one will be able to watch it either on television or even on YouTube, after the US Supreme Court ruled 5-4 last Wednesday against allowing the trial to be televised. Now, this is a little bit confusing, but I'll just try to explain very quickly. The case is currently before a single federal court judge in California. He had ruled to allow cameras in the courtroom. The anti-same-sex marriage people were not happy with this, so they appealed that decision to the US Supreme Court in Washington, D.C., and they're the ones who decided to ban the cameras, the Supreme Court. So even though it was just a technical decision about cameras, the US Supreme Court has already had a look in on this possibly historic and momentous constitutional case. The decision to prohibit cameras disappointed a lot of LGBT activists who wanted their arguments and their life stories to be heard by a wide general audience. But the opponents of same-sex marriage are the ones who wanted cameras banned from the courts because they don't want the public to hear how nasty and vicious they really are. Some commentators have been saying that the 5-4 split decision by the US Supreme Court could be a bad omen for this case when the substantive issues finally make their way up to the Supreme Court in a couple of years from now. The 5-4 split was between the 5 conservative justices and the 4 liberal ones, supposedly. And maybe that's the same split we'll see when the court actually comes to decide on the substance of the issue. Let's hope not. I guess we'll just have to wait a couple of years to find out. And finally, an update from Malawi, where we reported here on Reality Check 2 weeks ago that 2 men, Stephen Mongeza and Tiwonge Chimbalanga, had been arrested and jailed pending trial for participating in an engagement ceremony. Well, their trial was due to start last Friday, January 15th, but when they arrived at court, Mr. Chimbalanga, who was ill with malaria, vomited and collapsed in the courtroom. Unfortunately, no one came to his aid, and then, once he had recovered, and this is the most depressing part of this story, the authorities made him go and get a mop and a bucket and made him clean up his own vomit there in the middle of the courtroom with hundreds of onlookers, many of whom were ridiculing and taunting him. I should add that apparently mopping is considered women's work in Malawi. The trial didn't go ahead after this, fortunately, and the two men were sent back to prison, unfortunately. Their trial date is now set for next Monday, January 25th. This trial has been condemned by Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, and even by the Scottish Parliament. However, the Malawian government stated just yesterday that it remains determined to go ahead with the prosecution. So, with that very grim news, we'll conclude our LGBT news roundup for today. Let's listen to a song now, and when we come back, we'll begin our skeptical analysis of homeopathy. Oh yes, homeopathy. Right, I've seen quite a lot of homeopathic products in the chemists these days. So they must be good, right? There's so many of them. Well, not exactly. But to find out why, stay tuned here on Reality Check on Joy 94.9.
It's pure joy, 94.9.
Over 200 volunteers bring you joy every week. Joy 94.9.
Welcome back to Reality Check. I'm Tony Pittman and the station is Joy 94.9. And the song you just heard there was Center of the Sun by American pop singer Poe from 2002. We now move into the part of the show where we undertake a skeptical analysis of a subject related to pseudoscience or the paranormal. And tonight we're going to tackle a form of alternative medicine that has joined the pantheon of those classic topics that skeptics love to tackle, up there with the psychics, the ghosts, and the UFOs. And we're talking here about homeopathy. And the reason that homeopathy has come to be such a conspicuous target for skeptics is because it is so implausible as to be completely absurd, and exemplifies pretty much all the problematic aspects of all the other so-called complementary and alternative medicines as well. Now, where to start with homeopathy? Well, I think because there's so much wrong with it, we're going to need more than one episode to go through it. So I think today I'll just give you an introduction to homeopathy and some of the basic flaws in its underlying theory, and then next week we'll get into it in even greater depth. Now, before we get into a bit of its history and theory, let me just start with an example that will hopefully illustrate just how ridiculous homeopathy is. Let's imagine that you've got a bit of a headache and you want it to go away. Well, you're faced with a choice. You could go the conventional way and take a tablet with, let's say, 500 milligrams of aspirin, or you could go the homeopathic way. Let me explain what that would involve. One common homeopathic remedy for headache involves the extremely poisonous plant belladonna, otherwise known as deadly nightshade. Yes, that's right, good old deadly nightshade, used for centuries as a quick and effective way to get rid of an unwanted spouse. So you take the belladonna leaves or berries or root or whatever and grind it up into a lovely toxic paste, and then you shake it up in a bottle of water until it's well dispersed throughout the bottle. Then you take an eyedropper and get one drop of that milky liquid and drop it into an Olympic-sized swimming pool. Then you stir around all the water in the swimming pool for a few hours and bang the sides of the pool a few times to give it the right vibrations. Then you take one drop of water out of that swimming pool and walk across the road to another swimming pool and drop it in there. Then you mix that water all around for a few hours and bang the side a few times. Then you get a drop of that water and go next door to yet another swimming pool and drop it in there. And then again, mix it all around, bang the side a few times. Then you carefully take one drop of water from this swimming pool and place it gently onto a sugar pill. You then let it dry, and then you have your homeopathic alternative. Do you want to take the 500 milligrams of aspirin, or do you want to take my sugar pill that once touched water that had once touched a deadly poison, but was now so diluted that not one single molecule of that poison remained, just its so-called vibrational energy? So what do you choose? Well, if I seriously offered those options to you, you'd probably suggest that I should think about visiting a psychiatrist in the very near future, because it would seem that I have a very warped understanding of reality. Well, it's exactly that very warped understanding of reality that forms the basis of the whole field of so-called homeopathic medicine. Many people see the word homeopathic on a product and think it just means natural or herbal or somehow nice and gentle on the stomach. It doesn't mean that at all. When you see the word homeopathic on a product, it means it's based on pure magic. There's normally no active ingredient in the product, but according to the homeopaths, there is some kind of magical vibrational energy that will supposedly heal you. Oh, if only the world really worked that way. Okay, let's go back in time now and look a bit at the history of homeopathy. The theory behind homeopathy was devised by a German doctor known as Samuel Hahnemann back in the late 1700s. But before we get into that theory, let's have a brief look at the standard medical practice of the day to understand the environment in which Hahnemann's ideas emerged. Medical theory in the late 18th and early 19th century was still based on the idea of humorism. And remember, this is still about half a century or so before germ theory began to take hold. So they didn't know about bacteria and viruses. Okay, so humorism held that all diseases came about as a result of an imbalance in what were called the four humours, those being blood, phlegm, black bile, and yellow bile. And this theory dated back to the ancient Greek physician Hippocrates, who lived in the 5th century BC. So that means that just 200 years ago, medicine was still largely based on a theory of disease developed over 2,000 years earlier. It really shows you how far we've come in the last 200 years, doesn't it? So, based on this theory of humorism, depending on the type of illness a person had, to bring his or her four humours back into balance, you would have to try to reduce or increase the quantity of one of them. Hence, the treatment known as bloodletting. If you had too much blood, supposedly, in relation to the other three humours, the physician would have to drain some of it out of you. Now, obviously, given everything we now know about medicine, this could often have been the worst possible thing to do to someone who was ill and needing all the strength they could get to fight off an illness. Other treatments designed to bring your four humours back into balance included induced vomiting, applying hot cups to the skin, and taking mercurial salts, all of which could also be harmful to an already sick person. Another theory still prevalent in the early 19th century that had also been around for several thousand years was the miasma theory of disease. This was the idea that diseases, particularly cholera and plague, were caused by a miasma, that is, bad air, foul-smelling gases filled with particles of decomposed matter. Again, like the humorism, completely wrong, but fortunately it didn't lead to treatments quite as harmful as humorism did. So these were the predominant theories in the world in which Samuel Hahnemann grew up and out of which homeopathy emerged. Hahnemann originally studied to become a doctor and, after a short while of practice, came up with the very astute observation that medicine of that time, the 1770s and 80s, often seemed to do more harm than good. He gave up practicing medicine in 1784 and began investigating ways to correct what he saw as some of the most serious problems of medicine of the time. He became particularly interested in the effect on the body of cinchona, the bark of a Peruvian tree, that was widely used then to treat malaria. He took cinchona himself and noted that it produced malaria-like symptoms. This inspired him to come up with one of the basic principles of homeopathy. That which can produce a set of symptoms in a healthy individual can treat a sick individual who is manifesting a similar set of symptoms. This principle is often referred to as like cures like, and it's from this idea that the whole homeopathic theory sprang. Hahnemann then began testing other substances on healthy people to try to work out what sicknesses those substances could be used to treat based on the symptoms they caused. But he discovered that many of these substances were quite toxic and caused toxic effects in his subjects. So to solve this problem, he began diluting these toxic substances, and he claimed that despite this, they were still able to treat the relevant symptoms in sick people. He first published an article about his new theory of homeopathy in a German medical journal in 1796, and later published essays and books developing his theories further, including the book that is considered by many as the Bible of homeopathy, The Organon of the Healing Art, published in 1810, exactly 200 years ago this year. And you know what, dear listener? Hahnemann was partially right. Given the state of medical knowledge at the time, his treatments were often considerably less harmful than a lot of other treatments being used. Giving someone an extreme dilution of a toxin, in other words, giving them just pure water, was often a better option than many of the treatments of the day, such as bloodletting. So it's no wonder that Hahnemann thought he was onto something. And I reckon that the main problem with homeopathy today is not Samuel Hahnemann's fault. He was probably a very smart person, and you could easily argue that he was coming up with innovative ways to understand the body and disease given the very limited knowledge that existed at the time. And that is, of course, how science has always progressed, from people using their imagination and coming up with different ways to view the world, different explanations, different hypotheses, which are then tested to see if they have any validity or not. The fact that we now know that Hahnemann's theories did not correspond to reality doesn't mean that he wasn't a very smart cookie for his time. Just look at the great Greek philosophers. We now know that most of their theories about the world didn't correspond to how the world really works, but they were still extremely intelligent and creative to come up with such novel ways of understanding the world, given the prevailing theories that everyone else around them held at that time. So the problem with homeopathy is not Samuel Hahnemann. The problem is that the practitioners of homeopathy today remain frozen in a time capsule from the late 1700s. All the immense leaps in understanding in science and medicine that have occurred since that time, the whole development of the germ theory of disease, the discovery of bacteria and viruses, the use of antibiotics, the development of vaccination, of anesthetics, of surgery, of pharmacology, of radiography, basically every major advance in modern medicine is ignored by homeopathy. And it remains stuck in the idiosyncratic worldview of one German man of the late 18th century. In other words, homeopathy is like a dogma, rules laid down centuries ago that don't change, even as our knowledge about the world increases exponentially. And of course, homeopathy doesn't advance, doesn't develop, because when you think about it, how could it? How could a theory so detached from reality advance in any way? The only way it could possibly advance would be just to recognize that it has no validity and just let it go away. The only so-called research done on homeopathy is not by people trying to refine homeopathic theory. It's by people trying to prove that it does what it says it does and that it has a clinical effect. And the good quality studies show, time after time, that homeopathy has no effect. And yet they keep asking for more money to do more studies to prove that over and over again. The whole thing is completely ridiculous. And this is why homeopathy has become such a target for skeptics. Now, what I want to do today and also next week is go through some of the basic tenets of homeopathy and explain why they are really so stupid. Not stupid to believe them back in Hahnemann's day, but stupid to believe them today with everything we now understand about disease and the human body. So the first basic principle of homeopathy is known as the law of similars, or like cures like. And guess what? It doesn't. Like doesn't cure like. That's something a child would come up with, or something a doctor would come up with 200 years ago when no one else knew any better. But according to homeopathy, to cure someone of an illness, you need to give them some kind of poison or toxin that produces the same symptoms that the illness itself is causing. So, as we saw earlier, if someone has a fever from malaria, you should give them a toxic substance that will also give them fever-like symptoms. If someone has a headache, give them something poisonous that also causes headaches. If someone has a runny nose and watery eyes from a cold, give them raw onion that also causes a runny nose and watery eyes. If they're suffering from insomnia, give them caffeine that also causes insomnia, etc., etc. I know it's ridiculous, but just bear with me a moment while I try to explain the theory as best I can. So the idea, as far as I can understand it, is that if the body is suffering a certain symptom and you give the patient something that will increase that symptom, then you are somehow kick-starting the body's own response to combat that symptom. So if someone is trembling from fever and you give them something to increase that trembling, then the body will somehow spring into action and heal itself and fight off the cause of that symptom. That's the theory, anyway. Sometimes it's explained as a principle that the body cannot handle two different things inside it causing the same symptom, and so will react to eliminate both. And yeah, that may sound kind of logical to a child, But to believe that today, you have to willfully ignore everything we know about how the body works. If you're suffering from insomnia, caffeine will not help. Caffeine will not somehow kickstart some reaction in the body that makes you go to sleep. Caffeine is a stimulant. Caffeine will only wake you up, not help you go to sleep. To believe homeopathy, you really have to pretend you haven't seen the man hiding behind the curtain and accept these ridiculous theories as valid, even though you know they can't be. So the first basic tenet of homeopathy, the so-called law of similars, is not a law. It's just a made-up idea that someone postulated 200 years ago and was quickly seen to be untrue. It has no basis in reality, and the only people who still cling to it are the homeopaths. Now, just a couple of final observations before we finish up for today. The funny thing to notice about homeopathy is that it's largely based on giving people poisons. Almost all the ingredients in any homeopathic preparation are poisonous substances or toxic heavy metals or something just as nasty. For example, as well as belladonna or deadly nightshade, which I already mentioned, some common homeopathic preparations are based on things like strychnine or poison ivy or any of hundreds of poisonous plants out there. Other preparations are based on arsenic, or snake venom, or bee stings, or even cockroaches. Some are even based on pathological tissue samples, such as phlegm infected with influenza or tuberculosis. Tasty! Some homeopaths even make preparations based on non-physical elements such as x-rays, sunlight, and even thunderstorms. Now, dear listener, before you have an apoplectic fit about all these people taking poisons, let me reassure you that the one good thing about homeopathy that we'll get into more next week is that even though it uses all these nasty poisons, in most cases the toxic preparation is diluted so many times that not one molecule of the poison remains. So you end up with pure water or a pure sugar pill containing, fortunately, no poison. So on that note, dear listener, you can breathe easy until we return next week to continue our skeptical examination of the ludicrous alternative medicine known as homeopathy. Now, finally, before we get into our last song, if you have any questions or comments about what we've covered on the show, or maybe a topic you'd like us to cover, please feel free to send us an email. The address is realitychecktony@gmail.com. That's Tony, T-O-N-Y. You can also visit our webpage too, if you like. That's at realitycheckonline.net. There you'll find past episodes of Reality Check. Okay, let's listen to our final song for today, and when we come back, we'll get into this week's movie review.
Cruising for joy? It's safe listening. Joy 94.9.
Welcome back to Reality Check with me, Tony Pittman, on Joy 94.9. Also streaming live at joy.org.au and also available as a podcast to listen to anywhere in the world on your little pod. And the song you just heard there was What Do You Want From Me by openly gay American pop singer Adam Lambert. And that song is so new that it hasn't even been released in Australia yet. So you see that we are just so way ahead of the curve in so many ways here on Reality Check. And, oh, I just received an SMS from another Joy presenter, Sonia Suter, who presents Sci-Fi and Squeam on Thursday nights at 11 o'clock. Check that show out. And she says, that Steiner schools promote homeopathy big time, and Queen Elizabeth II uses it as well. So there you go, some more little details about homeopathy. And I had heard that the British royal family is big into homeopathy, and even, I think, has their own royal homeopath. Maybe something I can investigate for next week's show. Okay, for now though, it's movie review time here on Reality Check, and the movie up for review this week is the just-released Australian film Brand New Day. Brand New Day has been described as a coming-of-age Indigenous road movie musical comedy and is based on the stage musical of the same name written by Broome resident Jimmy Chee and first performed in 1990. The film is set in Western Australia in 1969 and tells the story of Willie, an Aboriginal teenager from Broome who's sent to a strict Christian boys' school in Perth, run by a German missionary, Father Benedictus, played by Geoffrey Rush. Willie runs away from school, and then most of the movie is about his journey and the characters he encounters along the way, back up the coast of Western Australia, home to Broome, over 2,000 kilometres away. So Brand New Day had the potential to be a very interesting film. I normally like musicals. I think if done well, they can be dramatically very powerful. And I'm always really interested to see stories about Indigenous people, whether they deal with the terrible injustices done to them or whether they simply tell a good story that just happens to involve Indigenous people. And think of a musical based on traditional Aboriginal music and reflecting a culture that we hardly ever encounter. It could be a really landmark, eye-opening and memorable film. And there are at least two good things about Brand New Day. One is that it's refreshing to see a film in which the protagonist and most of the main characters are Aborigines. The other good thing about this film is that it mercifully only lasts 88 minutes. And unfortunately, they're the only two good things I can say about Brand New Day, because this film really is a total mess. It's so bad that I don't know where to begin. But maybe I'll start with the acting. It's awful. Most of the lead actors are played by singers, not actors, and most of them can barely act. It's often really cringeworthy. And when real actors do appear, like Geoffrey Rush, they've been directed to play everything way over the top, as if this was some kind of pantomime for children. And that's another thing. Who is this movie aimed at? Clearly, the ridiculous acting and slapstick comedy is aimed squarely at children. And I mean really young children, like the under eights. And yet, at the same time, you've got really explicit songs and sexual references all throughout the movie, including several messages about using condoms. And, I mean, what are they all about? The movie is set in 1969, so that's long before AIDS came along, so it seems a bit out of place. Did the director just decide, well, I don't care, I just want to make this a didactic movie about the importance of safe sex? There's even a song that goes something along the lines of, yes, you can fuck me, but only if you use a condom. And all this in a movie aimed at the under eights. Like I said, it's a total mess. And speaking of the songs, how difficult is it really to lip sync the visuals to the audio track? Okay, maybe it's not that easy, but in some of the songs, the lip movements were so out of sync with the soundtrack that it took me a while to realize that a character was supposed to be singing. I mean, maybe it's quite technical to do that, but you'd have thought that it would just need a few more hours in the editing room to get it right. I mean, it's kind of important when you're making a film for the sound to correspond with the image. And what about the moral and political messages of the film? Well, once again, they're all over the place. For a movie set in several Aboriginal communities of Western Australia in the 1960s, you'd think there would be a lot of political messages to make. Yet the film largely ignores them. And the morality of the movie? Well, Ernie Dingo plays Uncle Tadpole, who's one of the heroes of the film. Uncle Tadpole is an alcoholic who also gets into the occasional fist fight. And in one scene, Uncle Tadpole steals quite a few things from a shop. Yes, he's a shoplifter, but that's okay. In fact, it's all done in a very funny slapstick way. I wonder how the 8-year-olds react to that. Isn't shoplifting funny, kids? And you can be an alcoholic shoplifter too when you grow up, just like Uncle Tadpole. Especially if you're an Aborigine too, like Uncle Tadpole. And what about the role of the church in all this? At the start of the movie, Willie's mother and the school principal want Willie to become a priest. But at the end of the movie, Willie confesses that he doesn't want to become a priest. He wants to stay in Broome with the girl he loves. He still wants to be a Christian, though. Absolutely. Church is good, and the Christians are all good. He just doesn't want to be a priest. But what about the scenes of corporal punishment at the start of the movie in the strict Christian school? How do they mesh with the happy, feel-good ending where everyone becomes a happy Christian? That's what I mean. This movie is an incoherent mess. It's all over the place. It doesn't know what it wants to be or what it wants to say. And most of the time, it's actually self-contradictory. Well, actually, I could go on and on about all the problems with this film, but let's just cut to the ending. So what about the ending? Does the film at least redeem itself in its finale? Well, I can only think of one word to describe the ending. Just stupid. At the very least, I thought we might get a bit of dramatic tension as we came to the climax of the film and all the threads of the story had to be resolved. Willie has to overcome the final obstacles to achieving his goals, facing his mother and getting back the girl he loves from the man who's taken her away from him. By the way, I haven't even begun a feminist analysis of this movie, but I know it would be appalling as well, and yet it's made by a female director. Anyway, instead of a dramatic climax, everything is resolved in a really trite, ridiculous way. And then there are a series of ludicrous revelations in which we find out that, oh, he's really your father and she's really your mother and he's really your brother and really we're all one big happy family. Under God, of course. And then that's the end. Isn't that sweet? It is unbelievably insulting to the viewer and left me feeling quite cheated and angry. Brand New Day is being marketed as the feel-good Aussie movie of the year. Feel good? Really, what is there for anyone to feel good about in this dog's breakfast of a film? The only thing I felt good about when the lights came up was that the thing was finally over. And that brings us to the end of the 24th episode of Reality Check on Joy 94.9. I hope you enjoyed the show. Remember to send any questions, comments or feedback to realitychecktony@gmail.com and visit our website at realitycheckonline.net. And remember to tune in at 10 o'clock next Tuesday for episode 25. Have a great week, everyone. See you next week.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.